Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. Mandy Cohen is likely a familiar name to you. During the COVID pandemic, she served as this state's Director of Health and Human Services and appeared on this and other programs, tirelessly updating us on the progress being made combating the virus. She would go on to become this nation's 20th Director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, changing the structure, culture, strategy, and decision-making processes of that federal agency using lessons learned from the pandemic. Previously, she served as Chief Operating Officer and Chief of Staff of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Service and was involved in many aspects of the development and implementation of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. Today, Dr. Cohen serves as an advisor of the newly formed Governors Public Health Alliance, a nonpartisan coordinating hub for governors and public health leaders sharing data on health threats to help guide public policy, emergency preparedness, and response. Given what has happened to public health at the national level since the start of the Trump administration, along with the response of the 15 governors who helped launch that public health alliance, we thought now would be a good time to spend an hour with Dr. Mandy Cohen, and that's exactly what we'll do. Welcome back. Thank you for being here.
Well, great to be back, Mike. Thanks for having me, and hello, friends in the Charlotte area.
Yeah, she's in Raleigh this morning. Let's start with the Governor's Public Health Alliance. This is relatively new. It's an organization formed as a result of what's been happening at the CDC, the organization that you used to run. What are you doing for the Governor's Public Health Alliance?
Well, look, we learned some very important lessons during COVID, and one of them was that viruses don't respect state borders, and that is true for many health issues, and it's important for states to be able to collaborate together, and particularly for governors to collaborate. I'm seeing great work at the public health level, where public health leaders are working together across state lines. The Governor's Public Health Alliance is meant to support the governors in their efforts to work together at this important moment. And it's critical for national security. We know that we continue to have health threats, and we are investing less and less at the federal level in that health security. And so more is being asked of the states. And so more support is needed for governors to do that work, whether it's to help them communicate, whether it's to help them share data, or whether it's to help them respond to the health threats that they see across their state and across their borders.
So there are 50 states, but only 15 governors have signed up so far to be part of this Governor's Public Health Alliance, including North Carolina's Governor Josh Stein. But although it is described as nonpartisan, only Democratic governors have joined the effort. Why?
Well, it's early days. And so I know that folks from red and blue states have been joining our briefings that we had before we even publicly launched. And the door is always open for more folks to collaborate. And so it's early days. I think we want to show value to governors' offices and keep the door open if more want to join. But we'll take the coalition of the willing so that we can get some good work done, raise up best practices, make sure we're supporting folks as much as we can. And I'm happy to be an advisor to that group, because look, there's a lot that's been going on this year, but before that, and I think making sure states are strong in their ability to protect people and their health is critical to having a thriving economy. And so we've learned that in North Carolina, and so happy to take those lessons to this new Governor's Alliance.
You have said that, quote, with many health threats at our doorstep, collaboration and communication between governors is essential to protect the health of families and to save lives. Is this only necessary because of what has been happening with the public health apparatus in Washington, D.C., or would it have been a good and or needed effort during your time at the CDC?
I think this was a good idea to collaborate more strongly at the governor level on public health, even before what was happening this year. But I think what we have seen at the national level has accelerated the need for this work, and has certainly allowed us to raise philanthropic dollars because folks see the need, in this time to be able to do this important work. But when I was leading North Carolina through the COVID pandemic with Governor Roy Cooper, we did do a lot of collaboration with other states, but we did it informally. There wasn't as much. Sure, we had the National Governors Association, but they have a lot of issues on their plate. We did a lot of that coordination informally, and this is a way to make that more formal and hopefully more supportive and more targeted, in the work that they can do.
So let me ask that question in a slightly different way. The Alliance describes itself as a nonpartisan coordinating hub for governors and their public health leaders. Is this because those governors, those public health leaders, are not getting what they need from the federal government, the CDC, or because they can no longer trust what they're getting from the CDC?
So that's a big question. Unfortunately, what we are seeing now is both a lack of support at the federal level, right? We're seeing the United States, for example, pull out of the World Health Organization, which does isolate the United States, but states like New York, California, Illinois, Georgia, they have huge international airports where folks are coming in and out every day. And so cutting ourselves off from the global environment, that's not reality. We can't be cut off. And so we need to make sure we're continuing to maintain that data sharing information globally so that we can protect people from New York City to LA. And so that we keep the viruses and the threats at the source and help to protect. So yes, we are doing it because there are changes at the federal level. And unfortunately, yes, what we are seeing at the national level, I think, is an erosion of trust, which means we have to look elsewhere for folks to lead. And I think governors, of course, are an important component of it. Obviously not in isolation, but an important component of leading at this important moment.
I know that the CDC nor the whole department that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Is leading, I know that they're not talking to you. They're not explaining what they're doing or why they're doing it. But does this make any sense to you? I mean, COVID came to us. The epicenter seemed to be New York City, and it certainly came to us from overseas. Monkeypox, where it has cropped up, has come to us from overseas. Other viruses have come to us because of international air travel and the fact that Atlanta and Charlotte and New York City are hubs for international air travel. And we have to know what's going on in other countries ahead of time before those diseases migrate their way to the United States. Does this make any sense to you? Can you figure it out?
Look, they say words like we want to protect health and we want to use gold standard science, but their actions do not match the words. And that is what is concerning. You know, what I have seen at CDC over the last number of months is a pattern of actions that is eroding the infrastructure that allows us to protect folks. So what I have seen is the fact that we've lost talent, people. Right? You can't run things without talented people. We've lost money, resources to the work, right? In order
Right.
to stop things at their source, you need money and resources. And importantly, as you mentioned before, we've lost trust. I made that a centerpiece of what I was focused on as CDC director, in terms of restoring trust. Look, we had lessons to learn from the pandemic. CDC, did not perform optimally. I think everyone agreed with that, including the folks at the CDC said we need to rethink how we're organized, how we make decisions, how we communicate. And that was the journey we were on. And I, you know, what I see is folks making decisions about CDC with outdated understanding of what was happening in the agency, as opposed to seeing the progress. Was it perfect? Of course not, right? It's always a work in progress. But they missed the progress and instead came with a sledgehammer and said, we're going to get rid of people, we're going to get rid of resources, and we're going to change processes to erode trust. And those three things in combination make me very concerned. And one of the reasons that accelerated this work
Yeah.
for governors to come together.
I want to talk about everything you just talked about at
It's a
length
long one.
as we go through the hour. But here's what the Governor's Alliance for Public Health says about how it will work. Quote, "The Governor's Public Health Alliance will serve as a unified cross-state liaison with the global health community and will facilitate cross-state collaboration by bringing together regional and other groups to share best practices and surface common challenges, elevating national considerations for vaccine policy and regulatory solutions to keep science front and center." Is this at all similar to how states acted when the CDC was running in a way that you think is the right way for it to run? Is it at all duplicative of what is happening now, or is it needed because it's not happening now at the federal level?
I mean, look, this work, I think, was needed before, but I think got accelerated because of the lack of leadership we're seeing at the federal level. And not just lack of leadership, but this dismantling of the infrastructure to protect folks at the federal level. I have not seen or heard an articulation of a new plan. All I've heard is breaking down of what we had before. And so that is concerning. And so states need to step up in this moment, and they have. And I want to say that, look, the Governor's Public Health Alliance, while there it's sitting Democratic governors in this time, and it's early days and open door for more to join. And like I said, staff from others have joined. But there is an advisory board that is very much bipartisan. We have former governors who are Republicans, former head of the RNC. So this is a bipartisan effort and should be. Public health continues to be a bipartisan issue. And I will say, during my tenure as CDC director, I spent a lot of time with congressional Republican senators, House members, Republicans from North Carolina and many other states who understand the value of investing in this, understand that for our economic health, we have to invest in our health security. And so I don't think this is a partisan issue. And I think you will continue to see that build over time. And I hope that this Governor's Alliance can continue in that vein.
One of the things that came out of the pandemic and may have led to some of the distrust you've already alluded to, and which we will talk about at length in the next segment, was a lot of confusion. And we'll talk about why there was so much confusion at the federal level when it came to COVID. But right now, we have this Governor's Public Health Alliance, we have the CDC. What happens if the Governor's Health Alliance makes recommendations that are at odds with the CDC or other federal guidance? Won't that sow more confusion and more distrust?
Well, I don't want to see any more confusion or distrust. That is definitely not the goal. I think the goal of this alliance is to support governors in their ability to make decisions for their state, as we did during the pandemic in North Carolina. We looked at good evidence, and then we would make good decisions. And I think this alliance is meant to support governors in understanding what are the best practices, what is the best evidence, and then to make their own choices. I don't anticipate seeing this alliance making its own independent recommendations, rather teeing up for governors who are leaders of their state, as we did during the pandemic, to say, here's the best evidence, here are some best practices. You might need to tailor this to what's going on in your state, and that's fine, but let's try to work together as much as possible so that we are, if someone is, if North Carolina is doing something great, maybe California is going to take that up and do that as well. So I think that is more in the vein of what you're going to see from this
Would that
alliance.
have ha I only have 30 seconds. Would that have happened before, or would we have just gone with whatever the CDC said?
A lot of times that, we would have relied on the CDC, but even when, as we were leading through the pandemic, we thought about what that would mean for North Carolina, and I think that's what this alliance will continue to do.
Dr. Mandy Cohen's with us. She's an advisor for the Governor's Public Health Alliance, former director of the CDC, and former secretary of North Carolina's Department of Health and Human Services. We're coming right back.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and Habitat Charlotte Region. Since 1983, Habitat Charlotte Region has partnered with more than 5,000 families through financial education, homeownership, and critical home repair. More information at habitatcharlotteregion.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest today is Dr. Mandy Cohen, who spent much of her professional career in various aspects of public health, including running the CDC during the last years of the Biden administration. And as head of North Carolina's Department of Health and Human Services, Dr. Cohen, I know that you relied on information, as did all public health directors coming out of the CDC. Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey, who's a part of this governor's Public Health Alliance, has said that Donald Trump and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. have, quote, turned their backs on public health. Do you agree?
Well, we have certainly seen a pattern this year of dismantling a lot of the work that was done to make sure that we could protect people's health in this country in three ways. As I said, we've seen them fire a lot of folks, and that has caused even more people and very, very, very talented people at CDC to leave the agency. I think they are down 25-30% of from where we were in January when I was the CDC director. They've held back funding, not just cut funding, but they have congressionally mandated funding that they are not spending. There's been lawsuits about that. And remember, 80% of the funds from CDC flow to states, right, to do the work that is needed to track and keep people healthy. And then they've also changed processes. I think we've heard a lot about vaccine policy, and I know we'll get into that more, but many, many changes on the vaccine policy front, where we used to have transparent processes with independent advisors at CDC to make recommendations. Those processes are not in place anymore. So with talent leaving, with resources, money not being there, and with transparent processes gone, the CDC is not what it was just a few months ago when I was the director.
Which is why you, along with several other health professionals, wrote an op-ed for the New York Times in early September, which was headlined, "We Ran the CDC. Kennedy is Endangering Every American's Health." Dr. Susan Menares, who has a PhD in microbiology and immunology, was named the director of the CDC and confirmed by the Senate on a party line vote. After Donald Trump's first pick to run the agency, David Welton, was withdrawn due to his concerns about his vaccine skepticism. Menares pledged to restore trust in the CDC, to modernize public health preparedness and strengthen disease prevention efforts, but she is removed from that position after 1 month on the job in September, which we'll talk about, but did trust. Because you went to the CDC to restore trust. She went to the CDC saying she was going to restore trust. After your exit, did the CDC need more trust restored?
Well, so what I would say is we were able to measure trust, right? So we've been measuring trust in the CDC for a number of years, and we saw it. CDC definitely took a hit in terms of trust during the middle to, you know, in terms of the pandemic. Right. It took a hit in trust. And so when I went there, I said, look, we learned a lot of lessons from North Carolina about how to build and maintain trust. I was so grateful. Not only did we not lose trust here in North Carolina, we actually increased trusts in the Department of Health and Human Services here in North Carolina. And I think it's because the folks of North Carolina saw Governor Cooper and myself every single day. that every day we would do those press conferences. We were incredibly transparent, tried to answer questions, tried to bring people into those hard decisions. And so we actually saw trust go up in the department. And I brought those lessons learned around transparency and relationship building and frankly, just delivering for people, right? People are just like, help me right now. And so we measured trust, and trust was on the rise and actually returned to pre-pandemic levels at CDC, right? So I joined in 2023, and during that time, and then my job ended in 2025. During that time, we saw trust go up in the CDC, return to pre-pandemic levels. Now, is there always more trust to gain? Of course. As I said, CDC was on a journey, and always can be ways of improving how it communicates, how it does its job. And I said, look, use a scalpel here. If you want to cut, you're going to have different priorities coming in with a new administration. That's fine. Use a scalpel, not a sledgehammer. But that was not the approach that was taken. And instead, I think it eroded the institution. And now we have seen trust go down in the CDC. And that is very concerning.
Well, trust was probably down. I'm going to ask you why you think trust went down from the CDC. Because if we all recall, those of us who lived in North Carolina during COVID, you were on television and radio with the governor on a daily basis. You were on this show constantly to talk about what the virus was doing, where it was, how we found it, how we should react, whether or not we should mask, et cetera, et cetera. While that was going on every afternoon at about 4 o'clock, the White House was on television telling people that maybe they should take bleach. Is that why trust diminished in the CDC? Because they were not getting CDC information. They were getting information from non-professionals.
I think there were a lot of reasons that trust went down. And I don't want to skirt around the fact that CDC needed to do better and didn't always do what they needed to do. But it didn't own all the things. To your point, CDC never said use bleach, for example. That was a different member of the administration.
It was the president.
And so it was the president. So there was conflicting information, yes. But look, I wanted CDC to take responsibility for the places it did need to do better, even in that context. And it did. It took accountability. And my point is, all right, it was on a road for progress. But what I've seen now is folks using that as an excuse to have this pattern of assault on structures that are necessary to protect health. And so we're not seeing are we investing? We're seeing the destruction of long time investments to protect health. And it makes me concerned we are not as prepared as we need to be going forward.
So when you went to the CDC and you've referenced that there were problems that you knew about because of your position in North Carolina during the pandemic, and then you wanted to address those and fix them. And one of the things you said you accomplished was transforming the agency's structure, its culture, its strategy, and its decision-making processes. Talk to me about the culture, because we always hear politicians come in and say they want to change the culture of an organization. CEOs say that. What was wrong with the culture of the CDC when you got there?
Well, one, I would say it is really important to think about culture. It's something I love as a leader, to think about how your organization runs and how can it run better. We did that in North Carolina, right? And again, so taking lessons from North Carolina, and it starts with what do we all have shared values around and how do we do that differently? What I saw at the CDC were two things. One, an organization that was very siloed, so that each pathogen, meaning Ebola, measles, COVID, everyone had their own program, their own data system, their own way of doing business, if you will. And that was not a productive way to operate, because you never know what's coming around the corner. Did we have a data system for each and every we didn't have a data system for COVID, right? Because it didn't exist. What you want to do is build platforms that can help you respond no matter what it is. Maybe like last year when I was CDC director, I spent most of my time on avian flu. And so we wanted to make sure we were able to respond. But what I saw when I first got to CDC was an organization that was very siloed. So changing the culture of how you collaborate together, and you could do that in a lot of different ways to change an organization, how they collaborate together. And I was really proud, but it meant we had to rip out and put in a new data system. It mean we had to change the way we work together and make decisions and the way we talk about things and solve problems for folks. That was a big one.
Change is difficult, particularly in large organizations where people have a vested interest in maintaining the status quo. And any manager who comes into any organization, I don't care what they do, they want to change things, and they're going to get some resistance from the people who are already there, who, quote, know better, unquote. Did you get any pushback? Did you find them to be cooperative? Because we've heard from the current administration about the intransigence of the deep state, and the only way to get rid of that is to get rid of those people. You didn't do that in most cases. You allowed them to morph. Did they give you pushback?
Yeah, Yeah, look, Mike, I'm so glad we're touching on this because this is not exclusive to CDC. I think the style of leadership that we have seen at the federal level, where it is about denigrating the people who are there, about cutting before you understand consequences of what those cuts are, fear, that's not real leadership. Like, that's not, if you look at any business school class, that is not how you get long-term results for an organization. But change is so important, and I am all about change. Everyone who knew me in North Carolina knew, like, I want change. And so there are ways to change an organization and change it fast without creating a culture of fear, which is what I see now. So what I said is really to paint a picture for folks to be like, what is that future that we're trying to aim towards? Remind folks that we are there to serve the American people and to say, look, the world around us has changed. It was my very first staff meeting, all staff meeting. I was 5 days a CDC director, and I went in front of my whole staff, 12,000, 13,000 people, and I said, everyone, look, the world has changed. Not just we've experienced in a pandemic, yes, and we've learned lessons, and the world outside has changed, and we have learned lessons. But technology has changed, data collection has changed, the way we communicate has changed. And if we don't respond, we're not going to have the privilege of doing this work into the future. That's the way. And Mike, did I need to have people leave the organization who were not on that journey with me? Yes, I did. Now, you didn't read about that in the news because, you know, I know how as a leader and a manager to handle those kinds of transitions in a way that does come from a place of caring and kindness. You can come from a place of caring and kindness and still expect urgency of change. And that's what I am not seeing at the federal level. I want to see folks that care about the expertise. I want to see folks that care about delivering real results and have urgency. You can have both. I think what you're seeing at the federal level is saying, oh, you can only do things fast. And I will say, it is much faster to tear things down. It seems like they're going so fast. Wow, they're doing. No, it is really quick to tear things down. What takes work is to build, is
Your
to invest, is to make those kind of changes.
successor at the CDC, Dr. Susan Linares, was removed after a month on the job by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. After she refused to support what he believed were potentially or were politically driven changes to vaccine policy and personnel that he had demanded. And when she left, three other top CD officials resigned and went with her. And that was heralded by many in the media as being a terrible thing that it was going to cause all kinds of major problems down the road. How did their exit impact America's public health?
Yeah, I was enormously concerned when I saw three of the most senior people who I'd worked directly with daily, hourly. These are such talented people. I cannot tell you what a big loss this is for our country to lose those longtime career officials who have built important systems that keep us safe, that learned the important lessons during COVID and were putting them to work. As I mentioned, I did have to ask some people not to, sorry, I had to ask some people to leave the CDC and not be on that journey because I did not feel that they had the urgency to change. The folks who were there that I had the privilege of working for every day were ones that were changing the organization, changing the culture, but doing it in a way that still allowed us to focus on the data, the evidence, the expertise that is needed to get good decision making. And so when I saw those three leaders leave, I said it that day, I am worried. You won't see it this week. You might not even see it this month, but these are going to cause long-term consequences for our country in terms of being safe. That lack of leadership and experience, I learned from them every day, and it was a big loss. And I should, you know, want to back up about Dr. Menares, who was the Trump administration's hand-selected nominee, right? They were the ones who selected. They let her be on the job for 4 weeks before they already said no. They got into a conflict because she wouldn't sign off on vaccine policy recommendations that she hadn't even seen yet. And you know, that is very, very concerning. And right now we have no CDC director. There's an acting director who has another day job as deputy secretary. So right now the organization doesn't have leadership.
So that happened, but a lot of things have happened in the last 9 or 10 months. Services and funding from the federal government for scientific and medical research projects have been reduced. Research projects, in fact, have been canceled midway in some cases. Thousands of federal healthcare workers have been fired. He replaced experts on advisory committees, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. did, with unqualified individuals by many standards who share his views, which are often seen as being unscientific views. And vaccine protocols and policies have been dramatically altered. At the head of it all, you have Robert Kennedy, who is a vaccine skeptic, subscribes to any number of public health conspiracy theories, and who made unfounded claims with no basis in science or research about a connection between vaccines and autism, which does not exist, and vaccines and HIV/AIDS. As a medical professional, of all these things, and the ones I didn't get to because the list would be too long, which is the most dangerous?
It's hard to prioritize that from that list. What I am worried about actually is the eroding of the integrity of the processes. And I know that sounds weedy, but right, what builds trust is transparency and processes that rely on experts to drive them. Now, experts feed into a process and then policies get made, right? We can all look at the same data and two policymakers could make different choices on it, but we all have to be looking at that same underlying information. So I am very worried about us eroding the integrity of the institution because I worry that then it will just seem like that folks will only trust the process if, quote unquote, their team is in charge of it. And that is a terrible place for us to be in.
I have about 30 seconds. Robert Kennedy says the CDC has strayed from its core mission, that the public trust had been hurt by bureaucratic inertia, politicized science, and mission creep. I know you don't agree with any of that, but do you understand what he's talking about? 30 seconds.
It's hard to understand what he's referring to. I wish he would have seen the progress we have would have made at CDC under my tenure. And you know, I do not think that he is taking things in the right direction, but more for us to dissect there.
Much of the problems, much of the lack of trust can be traced right back to the pandemic, the COVID pandemic. And you were intimately involved in that here in North Carolina. And we'll talk about some of the mistakes made and the lessons learned with Dr. Mandy Cohen. Stay with us at Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and the Gambrill Center at Queens, presenting author Robin Wall Kimmerer, known for braiding sweetgrass and the service berry, sharing perspectives on Indigenous knowledge and ecology on December 2nd at the Gambrill Center. More at gambrillcenter.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest today is Dr. Mandy Cohen, the former director of the CDC, the former secretary of North Carolina's Department of Health and Human Services, and now an advisor to the Governor's Public Health Alliance. It's an alliance of governors around the country who are essentially taking up the slack created by changes at the CDC under the current administration. Vaccine skepticism, vaccine hesitancy, lowering of vaccination requirements for children going to school have already begun to have an impact around the country. We just did a program last week on measles and how measles are cropping up around the country. And a lot of people don't know anything about the measles because, lo and behold, we eradicated it fundamentally through vaccinations. So they don't know that people can die from measles. And they don't know that vaccination is the really only real way to protect your child from that. Monkeypox is spreading again right now in pockets of the country. If we continue down this path, what do you foresee? I mean, are we going to see kids in iron lungs because they've contracted polio?
Well, Mike, it is heartbreaking to think that we have to go backwards and see kids get sick to remind us that vaccines work. It's why we don't see kids in iron lungs. It's why I will say, as a physician, I have never seen a case of measles, and I feel grateful for that. But we need to use the tools that have gotten us to this place. These are tools that are so important. No children should get very sick, be in the hospital, or be at risk of dying from things we have vaccines to prevent. And while we are seeing changes at the federal level, there have been small changes thus far, but what's really insidious is that it's causing a lot of confusion. There haven't been a lot of policy changes yet, but we are seeing a lot of behavior change in families and individuals in terms of their willingness to engage in vaccination, and that is very concerning. And so the confusion and the sowing of doubt is actually more insidious than the policy actions that we are seeing at this point at the federal level.
But unless you see policy changes, all the predictions of dire consequences seem to come on much more slowly. It seems to me if what you just talked about is what has resulted from the changeover, then people aren't going to understand the danger. Am I on the right path with that, or am I completely off base?
You know, look, the good news is, let's take measles as an example. Most communities, the vast, vast majority of people are vaccinated, which is a good thing. We see communities where more than 90% of kids are vaccinated, of adults are vaccinated, and that's great. But then there are pockets of places where we see lower vaccination rates. And when you dip below 90% and you start to get into the 80s, and then we see some even lower ones in the 70s, that is where I get very concerned that we are going to see measles outbreaks. And we have. We've seen it in Texas. I know you did the whole program in South Carolina. We're seeing more cases. And measles is the canary in the coal mine, if you will, because it is the most contagious. So we look at measles more as a red flag for all of us to say, what's going on in terms of vaccination rates? Why aren't we able to protect folks? And what we're seeing is a trend going in the wrong direction. And there are so many threats in the world, Mike, I want to be focused on, yet we're going backwards to fight battles that we had fought already on measles and on polio. It is really, really disappointing. We have a lot more other issues that we want to make progress on, but yet we're going backwards to fight old battles about why we should be using vaccines.
You said at the beginning of this conversation that during the pandemic, we learned that viruses don't obey borders. I'm paraphrasing here. Well, we already knew that. Let's be honest about that. We knew that viruses cross borders. They don't know one country from another, one state from another, one community from another. When you went to the CDC, you wanted to use some of the lessons we learned from the pandemic to prepare that agency for future medical emergencies. So in a nutshell, what did you and other public health officials learn as a result of taking us through that pandemic?
Yeah, like I always want to focus on our lessons learned so we can always be better. But I just want to take a minute here to remind us about what it was like in March of 2020 when we had a new virus we didn't understand and we saw China go down into lockdown. We saw Italy then next have their entire health system overwhelmed nearly overnight. And then we saw it come to New York and within 10 days saw a near implosion of the New York City health infrastructure, meaning people with lines outside, with morgue trucks, right? I just want to make sure everyone remembers because I want to talk about the lessons learned, but in March of 2020, we did not understand this virus, how fast it was moving, who it was impacting. Plus, we didn't have tests. We didn't have the proper protective equipment, even for our health workers. We didn't have any treatment and we didn't have vaccines. So I think it is fine for us to focus on the lessons learned, and I have many, and I brought them from North Carolina to CDC. But I think we have some selective amnesia about how hard that moment was for us to make decisions about, and we needed to move forward from there.
And I read yesterday, I think I read this about you. I read so much that I can't often remember what the exact details of it, but that you knew that you first understood that this was going to be a major problem when you saw the Chinese erecting mobile hospitals, enormous tent hospitals overnight. That's when you knew we have a problem.
No, and not even a tent hospital. They put up walls, right? They raised an entire hospital in 10 days. And I remember saying to Governor Cooper, we were at a cabinet meeting, I said, I see the Chinese government just put up a brand new hospital in Wuhan in 10 days. Something is going on there. And I will tell you, we're not going to be able to build a hospital in 10 days here in North Carolina. I am very, very worried. Yeah. And look, and we had a lot to learn through all of that. And until we were able to get tools in our tool belt to fight this, until we had treatment that we knew worked, until we had vaccines, until frankly, we even had tests, so we could help people know I have COVID, I don't have COVID. We had to use more draconian measures, unfortunately, in order to buy us the time we needed to avoid imploding the system. Now, what lessons do I take away from that? I think we were not as good as we needed to be in our communication of like, this is what I know and this is what I don't know. I think we were very good at this in North Carolina. I want to give us credit because we were on TV every day. We were saying, here's what I know, here's what I don't know. But that was something we needed to be much better at. We needed to get better at having those data systems in the first place to detect things. We had to have better mechanisms to get to rapid test development. That was a huge failure of CDC at the beginning, was on the testing, full stop. CDC dropped the ball on testing. And I spent a lot of time as CDC director to make sure that will never happen again. I hope that that work that we did there can stay because it was so necessary so that we can have lab tests going forward into the future. Those are some of the things that we definitely needed to do better, but it has to come with the context of what we were going through.
Well, let's talk about that. As you mentioned, some of the things that we probably have forgotten because they were so horrific, we kind of blot the horrible things out of our memory. And it was horrible when the virus was breaking out. All the scenes that you just set around the globe, and including in New York City, where their medical system was on the verge of collapse because of the crushing need to serve so many significantly ill people and putting healthcare workers at risk because we did not have the equipment and the protective devices to keep them safe. And we didn't know what this virus was. We weren't quite sure how it was spreading. If everybody recalls, at one point, we were all washing our groceries when we brought them into the house. And that went on for a long time. And I think it confused the public. I mean, prior to this, doctors were almost considered to be gods. Their word was golden. It was gospel. But doctors did not know what they were dealing with. Health professionals did not know. And so you flip-flopped. You'd learn something. You'd come up with new suggestions because you learned something. And that was difficult for people to understand. You no longer were invincible, and that was scary, I think. Could the medical establishment have been clearer in a way that would have allowed the public to understand that you were learning as we were learning, and that their mistakes were going to happen, and we could therefore excuse those mistakes and also maintain trust? Is there a way to do that? Because it's going to happen again.
Yeah, Mike, it's a really important point. And this is a place where I feel really good about our work in North Carolina. And I think it is why North Carolina fared one of the best states in the country. Not only did we see trust go up in our department and in public health, but we got 99% of our seniors vaccinated, right? And we're a purple state, and you could say, you know, we're rural, right? We have all the challenges. And so I was really proud of us. And look, and that was because I thought we were very good at saying, here's what I know and here's what I don't know. But it wasn't just that. It was also about connecting the evidence to what people were experiencing in their real lives. And it was my job to do both, where at the federal level, there were folks who were responsible for the, you know, the evidence, the science, and then there were folks that were responsible for what I'll call the execution, right? The delivery of the tests, the delivery of the vaccines. In North Carolina, I was responsible for both. And I think that was really important because people just don't want words. They want action as well, and they want to see results. And I agree with you that folks don't want perfection. They recognize in a crisis, everything is not going to go right. What they want is that transparency for them to understand that you see them, that this is hard. And I have said almost every day on every press conference to be like, wow, this is so hard. I wish we weren't here, but here's the reality. This is what we're seeing. I'll come back tomorrow to answer more questions if we learn something new. And it is why, as we learn something new, North Carolina was one of the first states to have our kids back in school first time, for example, right? So we were able to balance those kinds of things.
Let's talk about that, because that's one of the things that have led to this distrust of the CDC and medical health professionals and of science, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because of recommendations made during the pandemic in good faith based on what we knew at any given moment. And we knew in Italy that they were inundated with illness. We knew that in New York City, they were nearly, the public health system nearly collapsed. But it didn't collapse in Gastonia. It didn't collapse in Raleigh. It didn't collapse in very many other parts of the country. And yet, we shut down the economy. We closed the schools. We forced people to get masked. I think we kind of forced people to get vaccinations when the vaccines became available.
Can I reverse that? Right. Sure. I want to reverse that. Like, those bad things did not happen because we made those hard decisions, right? So we saw things implode in New York City, and then we, North Carolina, said, we don't want to see that happen here. We can't have our health system implode. And in fact, we were preparing at that moment for our health system to implode. We were making plans to build tent hospitals that you were mentioning before. But my point is, we didn't see those things happening because we made those hard decisions, we didn't implode our health system. So I just want to reverse how we talk about it, is because we got the result of not implosion because we made those hard choices.
And
then
the question was,
how do we come out of it?
Yeah, it's hard to prove a negative. The steps you took, you are saying, prevented us from having a collapse.
Correct.
Like we saw in New York City. But it's hard to prove that because it didn't happen because of what you did. So it's circular logic. It's just difficult to prove. But were any of those things, shutting down the economy, closing the schools, forcing mask wearing, making people get these vaccines, was any of that a mistake?
I want to put us back. It's real nice to Monday morning quarterback this,
yeah.
But put us back into March of 2020, where what we saw was an implosion of New York City, right? From a healthcare perspective, a virus we didn't understand. We didn't know who was going to get sick. We didn't have any tests, any treatment, any vaccine. We had nothing to protect our healthcare workers. So we had to take the most draconian measures. So I would absolutely not change anything we did at the beginning. Would I change the way we talk about it? Yes. Would I change the way we would do the rapid deployment of tests? Again, CDC takes responsibility for that. Yes, I was not there, but I was pretty pissed when we dropped the ball on tests here in North Carolina. Right. Yeah. We could do better at communicating, but those decisions needed to be made in order to protect people. And I think we forget what that was like. And then I'm so proud of what our country did in terms of Operation Warp Speed, in terms of getting vaccine to people so quickly. That was a Trump administration support for vaccines. That was honestly some of the most collaborative, like brave, courageous work I've seen, because they put a lot of money and speed into that. It was impressive.
It was a triumph, and it's odd that they have essentially turned their back on saving the country through that Operation Warp Speed. With all the turmoil, I have less than a minute, with all the turmoil in Washington, with the administration putting people in charge of public health that you and others believe are unqualified, who promote unscientific theories while shedding past, current, and future scientific research, who should the public turn to for information and trust? I have 30 seconds.
Always talk to your doctor, right? Talk to your personal doctor and make sure that you're having that good relationship. I'm going to keep doing our work to make sure that we have the infrastructure and the data that's needed. But talk to your doctor, get your flu shot. I got mine, right? The threats are still there, but this ship can be righted. We're going to keep working at it. I want North Carolina to be healthy and safe. And these are complex issues. So, but thanks for having me on, and stay well, everyone.
Dr. Mandy Cohen, former head of the CDC, former secretary of North Carolina's Department of Health and Human Services. Thank you for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.